were you talking about on your way over here? That you heard?
I wasn't talking about. I was talking about something I heard.
Oh, that you wanted to tell us.
So one of the I guess we have three new rock or alternative radio stations.
I like that you're doing air quotes.
Air quotes because it makes for really good podcasts.
Theater of the Mind.
Yes, but anyhow, the one that is run by Clear Channel is 103.1 iHeart Boston or some crap. Anyway, they are giving away, Kevin, you'll enjoy this, a 1972 Chevy Impala.
If I had just held on to the one that I used to.
Right.
Wait, you used to have a Chevy Impala in 1972.
It was your grandparents' car.
Yes, it was politely termed baby shit brown. And it was a anyway. We won't get into the
the granddad let Meemaw pick out the color.
Yeah, that's also a Texan thing. Is that we call our grandparents whatever it is that we can pronounce when we're children.
Yeah.
So
oh yeah, that's
you
is
get
that
old?
Why my grandmother is called Meanie?
Uh huh.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. I was wondering.
And
she
people
got that
from
name.
People who are not from Texas freak the shit out over that stuff like that. But yeah, that's what we were able to call my grandmother. And, yes, that car was roughly the size of a college education, and it was like this peculiar mix.
It had a spacious living room.
It was like it didn't
dinette in the back.
Like, it was like brown with a little bit of green in it, and
yeah.
It was like and it kind of off putting. But anyway, she picked it out, and when it got hot, those seats were
they were like black leather.
Yeah, you just and
leather.
It was like the one big
baby
like
shit brown car with black leather seats.
Yeah, yeah, and you would just fling around in there like the thing was huge. Anyway, it took like
it was kind of a menace.
What was the old joke? It's like the you know the first half makes the corner and the back half comes like 30 minutes later.
Half hour later.
Yeah.
So why were they giving away a 72 Impala?
I'm glad you asked. Evidently, it was used in, and I swear I can't remember, either a Panic at the Disco or Death from Above 1979 video.
Those are basically the same bands, to be
honest. Yeah, exactly. I couldn't name a song from either, although I'm sure they have their relative merits. But really,
so
the crux of the deal is you have to really like those bands because they're giving you a shitty car.
Did they sell? Did they like punch it up at all? Did they were like, no, it's really tricked out. You're gonna like it.
That's where they shouldn't do that.
It's just
only
drop off a merit.
Shitty
just that it was in a video by one of those bands, which of course has no use for it now. It's a shitty car, and it gets like a mile to the gallon. Like,
yeah, no, literally, you would when I would get in my grandmother's car. That she gave me, you would get in it and you would immediately scan the horizon for where the gas stations were because that's about how long you had to like get to wherever it was you were going.
Okay, let's get to work.
All right.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Somebody Likes It. I'm Sheena Bartel. He's my cohort.
I'm Ryan Newsom.
And
I'm Kevin Newsom.
Are you guys related?
We like to think so.
We look similar.
Yeah, I believe there is some gene pool.
Our parents think so.
Yes.
Your parents hope so. Well, one of your parents at least.
Let's
yes.
And that one varies. So it just depends
it
on what you
catch
it.
So we are, how should I put this? You guys help me out with this. This podcast, Somebody Likes It, what we're attempting to do is week by week, take an album that's very important to a large swath of people.
I think that's fair to say, yes.
Worldwide, but one that we have...
We don't ourselves know very well.
Right, or we have a casual reference. Today is a perfect example. I have a lot of good casual reference with this album, but never really dug into it. But it's very important to a lot of people.
Very important to a lot of people, and it was sort of a surprising turn of events, I think, upon its release. But I'd never sat down and listened to it ever in my life.
I felt like I had... Until I started listening to it, and I hadn't.
Yeah.
It just felt ubiquitous. Well, Kevin, why don't you...
Yeah, so...
You picked it this
week. So I did pick it this week, and one of the reasons that I picked it this week is that I have sort of an unusual relationship with this record, which is to say that I'm dating myself a little bit here.
Weekend.
Yes. Thank you. I will come across that. I will pull this show over.
Thank you. Was with venom in your eyes. So, did I miss something here?
No. That's probably, you know, I just try not to really listen when he talks. Anyway, the point being, so I have a weird relationship with this record, which is to say that I hated the shit out of the first Beastie Boys album. Hated it.
Oh, by the way, we haven't even talked about, like, I mean, what the record is. I mean, anybody listening will be able to see what we're, but we haven't actually introduced.
Fair enough. So I picked Paul's Boutique, and part of the reason that I picked Paul's Boutique is that for me, it felt a little bit like happening upon a classic after the rest of everybody figured it out long ago. Mm. And so I hated El Communication, or
that was after.
License Ill. License Ill. Anyway, everybody's ill. We're all sick.
Yes.
So the first Beastie Boys record came out.
I was in like 7th grade or 8th grade, maybe.
You're dating
many moons ago, and it was everywhere. And it felt a little bit like a one trick pony.
I can't forget when I was in. I remember running around in my backyard with my two little brothers, punching our fists in the air. Yelling, "You gotta fight for your right to party," and then going inside and eating popcorn.
Sure.
Yeah, so that was our
My weird, like, sort of post-traumatic stress disorder remembrance of that record is of the guys in the Beastie Boys going on the Joan Rivers show, which is, like, that dates the shit. Like,
that's pre-Arsenio Hall the first.
Yeah, yeah. Like, after she had, like, she and Carson
had...
He said
that,
like,
as though you were a king. King Arsenio Hall the first. He's got, like, a teal scepter.
Yeah. He's like...
People don't... I'm thinking 1992 is like, a very popular color on that show. Yeah.
He's like, those people over there think that I'm royalty.
Anyway, the first.
Anyway, no, but yeah, for the brief blip in time when Joan Rivers had a talk show, it was not very good, and it was right after she and Carson had this big falling out. We won't delve into all that shit, but the Beastie Boys showed up. And they were assholes. Like,
did they
throw
pies in people's faces?
Well, no, they were just obnoxious. They just, like, sat all over her desk, and, like, it was, like, not very, it was not the way that you do a talk show. And now they were, like, you know, part of the deal was
they were caricatures.
Urban Sprat guys.
But they did that on purpose. They created these characters and obnoxious characters.
That's true, but
when you're
sitting at home, you don't necessarily know that that's true. I was just like, these guys are obnoxious as shit. And it was one of those things where it just, like, you kind of got, it was like the first Outkast record. Like, it just surrounded you from all sides, and it came out of nowhere, and it didn't leave. It was like an unwelcome guest in your living room for a while if you didn't like that record. And so, anyway, I was a little bit older than Ryan.
As you're saying this, the soundtrack in my head is, "You wake up late for school and you don't wanna go." Wait, did I just say that like Adam Sandler? "You wake up late for school."
Yes.
Everything frat boy is just filtering in to my consciousness.
It's totally true.
Can you buy that commercially?
It's like, yeah, but it costs like $25 million.
Fair enough.
And it sucks out your integrity. So anyway,
your soul.
Yeah. So that was I had this sort of traumatic relationship with that first record, and when Paul's Boutique came out, I didn't listen to it because I wanted nothing to do with it. I was like, if that's whatever the next chapter is of this sort of relationship with this band that I already don't like, why would I just couldn't imagine that there'd be anything there that I found interesting. And then I went off to college, and one of my really good friends introduced me to Check Your Head when that record came out. And I was like, holy shit, maybe I just did this wrong.
It's a little bit of growth.
Sure, but who would have seen that coming from that sort of one-dimensional record?
No,
so,
I did the same thing. My friend, Killer Tom. Killer Tom used to give me rides.
Of course. Killer Tom.
KT.
Is Killer Tom doing a stretch?
No, Killer Tom is not doing the stretch. Killer Tom was a white, small-town boy that liked to cock his hat to the side, and he had a little embroidery on the side of his hat that said Killer Tom.
Yeah.
He was maybe 5'4", and definitely, I think he had a 72 Impala. It was some kind of old, ugly, big car that he picked me up for school every day. But we would listen to his tapes when we were going to school. He was like, gotta listen to the new Beast. Oh, he got really excited about it. When I went to his house for the first time, there were all these Beastie Boys pictures on the wall, and I was like, are you serious? I mean, even at that age, it seemed ridiculous and silly.
Sure.
And he was like, you gotta hear this Beastie Boys album. I was like, I have no desire at all. And he put it in, and it blew my mind. It was... Number one, that first record, aside from the frat boy lyrics and how simple, if you go back and listen to the way that the rhyme schemes are, it's like, boom, 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 boom. It sounds like somebody poorly programmed a drum machine. And you listen to Paul's Boutique and all the flows, they're just constantly interacting in these really mellifluous ways. And the music is completely different. License to Ill was all rock and roll based with like simple drum machine beats. You go listen to Paul's Boutique, really complicated 70s R&B drums, and
they just kind of threw everything at the wall. And
well, they completely radically overhauled what they were doing.
Well, and there are a few reasons for that. I mean, at least one of them is that they had a falling out with Rick Rubin and Def Jam.
Thank God.
And they left Def Jam, and they signed with Capitol, and they moved to L.A. And so that record was – the funny thing is, it's like it's a very New York-sounding record, I think.
I had no idea that they were in L.A. The picture on the cover is – definitely,
it's like a bodega.
It is. It's definitely, and it's shot. It's the picture is New York, and the record sounds like a sort of new, like sort of the epitome of the rising of the New York DJ mashup scene. For lack of
a better word. Hey, I'm getting a beer. You guys,
I'm good. I don't need a beer. All right. Also makes for great podcast.
Yes. This is what happens when you keep a refrigerator in your garage.
Theater of the mind. Oh, we haven't even talked about the fact that we're in your garage.
We are still in my garage.
What a man cave thing to do. Three dudes sitting around drinking beer in a garage.
To be fair, I'm having a vodka soda.
It's true. But let me wrap this story. So they move out to L.A. They have this famous falling out with Rick Rubin, and they sign with Capitol. And of course, Capitol's got dollar signs in their heads because that first record sold so much that they got to squat all over Joan Rivers' desk. And then this one plateaued at somewhere around, it might have been like number 24. It didn't do well by their standards.
No.
And so that's because people wanted to see
people like the Beastie Boys doing a video. Like, I hope no bad people come and pies getting thrown in people's faces.
Right.
But we're talking about this, I'm reading on Wikipedia. You know, the amazing thing I'm learning about Wikipedia as we've been doing this the last few weeks is how much people that have hard-ons for whatever group they're writing about. This is not well
to commandeer the page.
Thank you, Ryan. Yes, there's. So anyway, but I didn't realize that the Dust Brothers, who produced Paul's Boutique, their big hit before Paul's Boutique was Tone Loc. I think we all remember Funky Cold Medina or Wild Thing.
Oh yeah,
she got paid to do the Wild Thing, by the way, Ryan. And by Wild, it's a euphemism for sexual activity.
Sex,
yes,
intercourse,
prostitute.
Yeah. Thanks for the breakdown, there, Professor. So I do think you kind of bring me to an interesting point, Shane. Like, 20 years after that record came out,
the Tone Loc record.
No. 20 years after Paul's Boutique came out. And specifically with related to the Dust Brothers.
89.
MCA, Adam Yauch, was talking with Clash Magazine and had this to say, and I thought this was really interesting. He said, the Dust Brothers had a bunch of music together before we arrived to work with them. As a result, a lot of the tracks came from songs that they'd planned to release to clubs as instrumentals. Shake Your Rump, for example. They'd put together some beats, bass lines, guitar lines, and all these loops together, and we were quite surprised when we said we wanted to rhyme on it, or they were surprised when we said we wanted to rhyme on it because they thought it was too dense. They offered to strip it down to just beats, but we wanted to get all that stuff on there. I think half the tracks were written when we got there, and the other half we wrote together. So it really was a collaboration that the Dust Brothers, like, they get – I think they get a lot of sort of posthumous is not the right word, but most of everybody is still alive. But on the backside of that record being released, those guys get a lot of credit for being part of it, and
after
rightly so. But not a but after the fact. And there were some tracks that the Beasties actually played their own instruments on, which they did a lot of in Check Your Head moving forward. So anyway, I think that's interesting, and I guess the one question I would ask is, if you guys had to guess, like I found an article that has an estimate, like nobody has an exact number, but I found an article that has an estimate, a guess, at maybe how many total samples are on the record. And if you guys had to like sort of roundabout take a spitball.
Over 100, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's over, not as much as 3 Feet High Rising, but that's an album for another day.
Oh, yeah.
250? There's a lot of live drums and guitars on this record.
Yeah, and it's so. Yes, it looks like one estimate has it as many as 300 total samples. So
that's a lot of fun.
There's in fact, there is a website that is solely devoted to this record. I mean, it's whatever, but solely devoted to this record, and breaks down track by track, sample by sample, how many samples there are, and some of them they're like, we're not sure. Like,
okay, right. You know what? I just have to. We have to push pause just for 1 second while I say this.
Sure.
What you just told us about there being a website devoted to all the samples on this record and breaking it down,
yeah,
that exactly typifies what we are doing here.
Yeah.
Somebody likes this.
Yeah, no, totally.
Somebody
really
likes this.
More than one person really likes this record.
We like it.
Yeah. No, they're crowdsourcing just trying to figure out something that happened in 1989. Like, that's... That's exactly what they're doing, and you know, and it's not a moving. I mean, it's a moving target in that it's a you know that's a living piece of collaborative music.
Did you know that they named a small side street in LA for MCA?
I've been to the Adam Yacht Park in New York,
and there's Adam Yacht Park now. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Nice.
I just find it fascinating. If you go back 25 years and listen to Bison Fit Ill. That when this dude died, he would not
this legendary figure now.
He has a park!
Well, and I don't really have a great... This is a terrible way to start a story, but I don't have a great ending to this, but my buddy Dave...
Oh, I can't wait.
Well, our friend Dave played basketball in New York with MCA.
Really?
So, yeah, so he would just go down
Cleveland
and...
Dave?
Cleveland Dave.
Wait.
Yeah. Yeah, we have a friend named who we call Cleveland Dave.
Is his first name... Is his Christian name Cleveland?
No, he's just from Cleveland.
He's just from Cleveland.
That's so boring.
And, well, I will tell you one little less side bar story that is less boring on Cleveland Dave, which is that when he first moved, he's lived in Austin for a very long time. He's a super great guy and very cool. He's cooler than I am in that he's shot hoops with MCA, which I clearly am never going to do. But
not in this life.
But when he first moved to town... My favorite Cleveland Dave story was that he had like a, you know, he's from the Midwest. He had a like sort of like a polo shirt on, and we were like, Dave, we got to send you to a thrift store, man. We got to get you comfortable in Austin. He's like, okay. And so he went and he bought another shirt that was just the same kind of shirt.
Was it the exact same shirt?
It was not the exact. It might have been. It might have been. You just get this asshole off my back, like
Cleveland Dave.
Yeah. Cleveland Dave. But I'm fond of Cleveland Dave, and he shot hoops with MCA.
And he used to sell meat for Sara Lee.
Okay, so... Wait, isn't Sara
There's
Lee a cake company?
Speaking of which,
I thought they only did, like, pound cakes and, like, strawberry shortcake.
Apparently they have a division that
they have a
devoted
division?
To meat, and he was the Sara Lee liaison.
Liaison.
You know what? I think that Cleveland Dave and Killer Tom... Should hang out and have like a cop show.
If we can get Cleveland Dave, he travels all the time.
And he has like four kids.
He's got 3 kids that simulate. 25.
Of course, he travels all the time.
But
selling meat for a frozen cake company. Why would he not travel?
We're sidebarring too much. But I think the interesting thing is that you meet. That's a great thing that is I think analogous to this record and sort of talking about the people that you meet is like you. Our lives take us on interesting journeys, and the stories that you tell along the way are what's
interesting.
Will you write that in my yearbook, please? I will. Have a long summer.
May your life be long like a roll of toilet paper.
Did you coin that?
No. It was somewhat ubiquitous.
I'm familiar with this.
Northwest
Houston. Oh, okay. Yeah, it's location specific. So, Kevin, I think that now we should actually... I mean, you guys can...
Yeah, let's play a track.
Yeah, let's play a track, and then let's talk about the record. I want you to play To All the Ladies, because it's the first track on the record. It's basically a throwaway thing, but it sets the mood and the tone for what the record... The change, it's basically all keyboards, completely taken away from that Rick Rubin, you know, heavy metal guitar stuff with the simple, stupid drums, complicated drums. But the funny thing is, it also is like a bridge shift in tone, because the lyrics are basically like, to all the ladies in Japan, to all the ladies in Sweden, to all... Well, just play it and we'll be able to experience that ourselves.
All right, here's to all the ladies. Italian women, to the Upper East Side, Mumbai, to all the Jamaican girls, to the topless dancers. So did you hear, for a while this was happening, and I don't know if it still is, but it made national news, or at the very least it showed up on the Today Show, which is, I don't know, they also had a guy on who could draw a perfect circle once, so I don't know like how they're setting up for. And they have an entire fourth hour where
Dude,
the host is
totally
drawn.
Perfectly round. Check it out.
Yeah. They all just... I don't know. I just looked at it after. So anyway.
They actually bust out protractors and measure. And
a segment producer was stoned when that fucking went down.
Like, but no. But you have to understand, the circle is perfect.
It's totally round.
So anyway, so there's this. It's like a Wendy's or a KFC or something where you have no business being in there after a certain hour. Mm-hmm. And they're bringing in DJs. Like they're like somewhere.
Wait, on the Today Show?
They did it at some fast food outlet apparently. At some fast food outlet in Houston, they did a thing
like
where
a McDonald's.
It could be. Yeah, it was not
that
McDonald's.
That has got to be the lowest rung of the DJ ladder.
I know. Right? It's gonna be like
it's like when I saw a guy busking in front of the dollar store.
It's like
that's the lowest rung of the busking ladder.
It's like
no, I want to know if the DJs at McDonald's do they hire from in house.
Well, the best part
is it like popcorn?
Really, really, the best
coming from the back.
The best possible situation would be to be at the gig before the DJ plays the fast food restaurant. Be like, yo, check me out next week at Wendy's.
Rock me some Wendy's.
It's, bring on your fucking nuggets. You know, actually, that reminds me. Well. There's a, if you guys ever get a chance to check out the comedian Kyle Cease, who does a really great bit about Universal Studios, which we will not go into here, which is going to make it very unfulfilling for the audience.
I interned on that lot for an entire summer.
You interned in Universal Studios? Oh, when you lived in LA?
I worked for a production company, and I drove a golf cart to fetch lunch.
Oh, man, for some reason, my brain, when you said I drove, my brain finished it with an 18-wheeler. I just had a brief image of you rolling down the road in an 18-wheeler with a trucker hat on.
Yeah,
damn right. There's like a chimp next to me.
Don Williams on the radio. Or like,
I don't
just
know how to drive a truck.
Like, that all happened within a millisecond. Of the
cultural time.
Of you driving down the street. No, when you said, I drove up, and then
immediately fucked it.
All right.
Anyway, now we're circling back. So and remind me, and I will at another time. I will regale you guys with the a little bit of side swipe on
that. You're drinking out of the chalice again, by the way.
I am. So the chalice will make an appearance at every one of these. I feel certain, partially because it's virtually impossible to pour beer poorly into the chalice.
Okay.
And so, as you get older, and your coordination just means it, you know.
You know what? It's though you're 8 years old now, with the chalice. Like, I can't pour beer.
Is this podcast going to be in the paper
the next few days? I guess.
They never discuss a man's age.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But is this podcast going to be in the paper?
Back to the.
Anyway,
let's hope not.
So circling back, yeah, there is a. Kyle Cease is very funny. We'll talk about that another time. They're also. Real deal, that thing in Houston is happening, and they're having DJs on, and it does
from in house. Don't we have an album that we're talking about?
We're talking a little bit about Paul's Boutique, and in particular, you know, one of the things that we teased last week was the idea that maybe this record was illegal, and one of the reasons that I threw that out last week was because when MCA passed away in 2009. There was an uptick in interest in the Beastie Boys, and in particular about this record. And it was made in a way because it slaps together so many different samples. It was put together in a way that's really, it would be really difficult to do today. And
it's
so
impossible to do today.
Yeah. Sure. Like, you just have to lawyer up, and by the time that you finish paying fees, I guess if you're a big record company, who knows how worth it would be.
You'd have to be some sort of mogul to be able to clear everything in that fashion today.
Well, and in particular, I mean, so there's a really great piece that was written at Slate about Paul's Boutique and if that record was illegal or not. And it delves, it kind of goes down the wormhole about court decisions and, sort of the draconian way that some of that stuff gets interpreted these days.
Well, it was made at the time. Like, I remember when the laws came out that they were supposedly, and I remember thinking, "Oh, this is skewed in the favor of the artist." And
right.
It's amazing to me that somebody, I don't know, a la Jimmy Page, you know, would get incredibly pissed off at some inner city kid from New York in 1985 making a rap album based on a sample of.
Meanwhile, Led Zeppelin's entire career was based on ripping off.
Other artists, yeah. Right, blues artists. And also Led Zeppelin have millions upon millions of dollars.
Yeah. The gentleman does not need the money.
You remember when Metallica, you remember the whole Napster controversy that happened with Metallica?
Sure.
Metallica were so mad that people were downloading their music, and like, I remember...
To the point where they sued their own fans.
They sued their own fans, yeah. Right? Lars Ulrich, they had a press conference, and he was like berating people for listening to them, and I distinctly remember seeing that on the news and thinking, like, you're rich.
Yeah.
You're a rich guy, and you're mad that people want to listen to your music?
You're gonna
do all right.
Yeah. I won't want to sidebar on this too much, and I believe it was when I was managing you, but it might have been another act I was working with.
Oh, we haven't even gotten to that.
I was at South by Southwest and met Lars Ulrich. Two things.
He's short.
He's like 5'2", maybe.
Yeah.
You know, in heels. But he had on each arm, like, just a perfect 10 smoking hot woman.
He's an art collector now. Like, that's part of his
thing.
That's
what I was going to bring up, the fact that he was... Did you see Metallica, Some Kind of Monster? You know what? We should review that movie.
I will tell...
We should jump off a cliff and actually review a music movie and I'll watch it.
I will tell the longer version of this story, but I met the father-in-law of one of the guys from Metallica in Paris. He owns a little wine shop. And that movie, Some Kind of Monster, was getting ready to come out. And he was very big on talking about that, yeah, there's this Metallica movie. Now, maybe it was the ensuing. There's been a second movie that was, I think, a little bit more favorable.
This one wasn't so favorable. It's a bunch. It's four whiny rich guys complaining about.
And they're shrink, right? Like, there was a Closterman piece on that too.
Anyway, so
let's circle back to Paul's Boutique. And I think one of the things that you know, we talked a little bit about is the record illegal? And there are lots of examples of both, you know, in particular that article cites MC Hammer and Vanilla Ice and the way that they sort of had to legally backtrack or jigger the way that they put everything out there. So, like for instance, on Ice Ice Baby,
oh, so they put one more beat in there or something?
No, they just
clearly rip off Under Pressure.
Well, I mean, it's the central precept of that song. So
I don't
you
think
can't,
there's anything wrong with sampling. I don't think like sampling is necessarily a ripoff. I mean, there are definitely ripoffs within rap songs and sampling, but just sampling. I mean, if you were to listen to that, the thing is that, and Kevin has a good point here. The thing about sampling, when they become ripoffs, it's because you weren't able to do this dense layered sampling that you find on Paul's Boutique. You have very similar, like,
true. Okay, but when the central conceit of your song is somebody else's song, that's a ripoff.
But you, no, I don't think so. You can take pieces of a song, you can take very small snippets of a song and create a whole, of existing music and create a whole new palette to perform over. When you do something like, Sean, air quotes, Puffy Combs did with, you know, like I'll Be Missing You, where the entire song is basically based on
Every Breath You Take.
That's a rip-off, but that's totally different. When you do really innovative cutting and pasting of samples, that's not a rip-off. You're taking small little elements that are in songs and then recombining them for something that's totally different. And if you and I mentioned 3 Feet High and Rising earlier, I think that album,
De La Soul.
Yes, De La Soul. I think that album, well, I know for a fact it has one of the highest recorded uses of samples in popular music. I want to say it has the most, but I know I'm going to get called out if I say that. Somebody's going to drop some really obscure shit on me and school me on that. But it has an amazingly high, in fact, that album was the reason why sampling got taken to task and why they rewrote the laws. But it go and listen to a song, Me, Myself, and I, a song we all know. That whole song innovatively uses guitar samples, drum samples, vocal samples from various songs in a way that it sounds completely original and doesn't resemble any of the original songs in any way.
Well,
and that's not a ripoff.
I think you can make the argument that, well, two things. One, music is inherently collaborative. So stands to reason that even if you can't monetize it, record labels,
I think that's a good point.
Like, it's still like that's still going to happen. And the way that the model has sort of changed is that you take acts like Girl Talk or like the DJ that does all the Beastles mashups. Like, those things still happen. They just don't charge for them anymore, or they do it in a way that they have to sort of exist on the fringes. And
they realize it's like a hydra, you know,
well,
start cutting the heads off and
sure.
Off somewhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you guys don't mind, I wouldn't mind getting into what my impression of Paul's Boutique was.
Oh, you do impressions.
Oh, King Ryan.
That's right.
Please.
Right.
But, please.
Oh, okay. I thought I was going to talk about some record.
Yeah.
Oh, let us know your opinion,
now,
Ryan.
Sure. Ryan, what'd you think?
Well, all right. So I was in 7th or 8th grade when License to Ill came out, and it was, like you said, ubiquitous. And I never owned a Beastie Boys record, and I don't think I've ever heard one all the way through. And I tried on this, and I do think, and Shane, you know this about me, that you know, the way I enjoy music, the music has to really get to me before I'll even notice the lyrics.
That's true. That is true.
And I do overall think that the music is a giant leap forward on this record. But here's the thing. Why are you yelling at me? All the Beastie Boys seem to do is yell at me.
This is where the narrator goes, maybe you don't get rat.
It might be. Yeah, I'm just like, cut it out, man. Like, I mean, yeah, I get that, you know, you guys are, you know, more mature now. And this is,
it's not singing. It's not the same
No,
thing.
I know. It just reminded me of that. All right, so for 3 years in the mid to late 90s, I lived in Fort Wayne, Indiana, as both of you well know. Part of that time, I had an apartment with a very thin wall that I shared with a gentleman who, shall we say, dabbled in the distribution of recreational pharmaceuticals.
So he was a pharmacist?
recreational pharmacy. And that gentleman really, well, A, he really liked the song I'll Be Missing You, and would play that ad nauseum. Yeah, and it seemed to be, like, right when I was trying to take a nap in the middle of the afternoon. The other artist that he seemed to have a great fondness for was Busta Rhymes. And Busta Rhymes also just yells at people. Like, that's his whole career path. Is yelling at people.
So you feel like I don't think there's any comparison to Paul's Boutique and Busta Rhymes.
Well, sure.
But
I like that's
your takeaway from this album. Stop yelling.
I will say that only one of the two of them was in Finding Forrester.
Is that Adam Sandler?
No, that's
a Sean Connery.
You're the man now.
You're
dog.
The man now, dog.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
He's a good kid.
Yeah, it's like. It's kind of the way that was essentially Busta Rhymes was Rob, what's his face, is Rob Brown's older brother.
Hey, you know what? If we're going to talk about the Beast Boys yelling at Ryan, we should play a clip from Shake Your Own. There's definitely
let's commence with the shaking and the rumping.
My brother, since we're genetically related and whatnot, he gets nose hair, which just in the last couple of years, with my impending middle age, I've been enjoying this new phenomenon.
I thought what he meant was like, does he understand it? And I was like, what's there to figure out?
You get nose hairs. Yeah. Can you explain that to me?
What are these hairs?
A degree. You have to read books by Schopenhauer, Nietzsche, and nose hair.
To understand nose hair?
Yeah.
It's a very high concept.
Existentialist take on it.
No, and I just, you know, at the moment was having a little wisp of a nose hair.
Do you hate it when people say itching? I was going to say, was it itching your face? But I have a pet peeve about people saying, like, it was itching my head instead of saying, like, I have an itch on my head. Instead of saying, I will scratch it, saying, I will itch it.
I have a buddy who's that way about nauseated and nauseous. They're not the same thing.
They are not the same thing.
So it's been in the last 3 to 4 years that I've experienced this new phenomenon of...
nose hair?
Not just nose hair.
And then one day you'll just see one, and it basically will look like somebody made a mustache waxed, curly Q mustache, but it's just right outside of your nose.
Your nose, yeah. I'm sure that's coming on the hipster horizon.
All right, to that point, old man, you were talking about people being on your yard
birds
and yelling at you and like.
Yes. Well, okay. Let me finish this thought real quick. So, as both of you may recall, 3 to 4 years ago, I was the in-house booker for a local club here in town booking bands.
And that's Booker with a K.
Booker with a K.
We were just talking about nose hair. Anyway, it's a bad pun.
No,
anyway, go ahead.
Booker? Yeah, booker at a local club.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen,
clearly,
Kevin Newsom will be here all week.
We're five.
Second show in
and
electric.
I'm a dad. So
early on in that tenure, I took a meeting with a rather attractive young lady who ran a promotional website here in Austin. I won't say which one. We went out to a bar, and I'm having a really good time with her. We're, you know, having a couple drinks. I've been there for a good hour, hour and a half. We talked about business some. We stuck around and played some trivia. I go to the bathroom, and jutting out of my ear about a good inch and a half, 2 inches, is a speaker wire. It just did not belong there.
like a literal speaker wire?
Made of human hair.
Okay,
that's what it looked like.
That's my point.
Picking up radio stations that you hadn't been able to get
that's
before?
That's what it looked like. I mean, she had to have noticed it.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's something about your game, dude.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, sure.
I didn't get anywhere with her.
Because you had a speaker wire sitting out of your ear.
I'm sure I got back and she was all relieved. But anyhow, we'll cycle back.
Yeah, we'll cycle back. Yes, so that song, I wanted to play that song specifically because there's a lot of yelling. Because you have this really, the first track on the album, it's really mellow and lean. To all the ladies in Japan, it's leading you. This all of a sudden is like,
all of a sudden we're in a bathroom in Guadalajara. What the hell was that? somebody just strangled a chicken. I don't know what just happened.
That's how this record and just Beastie Boys in generally kind of sonically assault me, though.
What here's one thing that I will say, and it's not so, it's funny to me that we've gotten like almost 40 minutes in this podcast, we haven't really talked about this, but I think that this is something central to this band that I think about from time to time.
You just got really serious for a second.
I didn't. I know.
I appreciate
it's like
that.
It's like an NPR moment. One of the things I think that I don't spend a lot of time consciously thinking about until I listen to these records in, you know, roll around in them for a little while, is that, and this is especially noticeable when Adam Yauch passed away, is that you have two guys in that band, or two guys in that act, that sound like,
well,
they sound,
I mean, they all played it. They all
sure.
played. Mike D played drums.
Yeah, no, they all played instruments. But there are two guys in that act, or band, or whatever we want to call them, that sound, like their pitch is very similar. Like,
I never could figure out.
And MCA was
Ad Rock when I was a kid. Like, they had a very similar timbre, as it were.
Right, and well, in the way that they phrase is like, so what it means is that that lyrically, those rhymes are very tight, as the kids would say. But yeah. You know, Yauch is the one that you could pick out because he had the sort of gravelly counterbalance to the other two.
Right. Yeah.
So,
yeah. The other two were the Yellers.
They were.
As Ryan Newsom.
And now they're all Yellers. So.
Kevin Newsom. Here
this is what happens when we're in proximity to my beer fridge. But still. Anyway, enough Jackie Mason. But I do think that that's always been one of the things that's been really interesting. And, you know, the other two guys still to this day will, like, they're not done creating. And they're not even necessarily – they've never even said that they'll totally retire that name. But one thing that they did do is
– they should. They're 50.
Well, I think so too. But
you shouldn't be called a Beastie Boy.
Beastie Boy when you're 50 years old.
If you think Mick Jagger's going to be doing this when he's – whatever, how's that going?
Right,
almost
yeah.
famous? Anyway, but yeah, no, I still think that, you know, they're like, they hold on to their creative aesthetic, but the one thing in particular, and especially as it relates to this record, is really interesting, is the Beastie Boys sue people. Like, there have been a couple of instances.
Really?
Yeah. Like, not in a Metallica
in
way.
Capacity.
Well, there was, and I'm
fall and your lower local.
And I'm super
burn their hands with hot coffee. Yeah.
So I'm super paraphrasing here, but so they're.
You realize whenever you paraphrase that we are going to hear about this later.
No, it's okay. Earlier. Well, no, I mean the basic facts are right, which is to say that there was some sort of ski party, like Aspen type thing, somewhere in Colorado. It was Aspen or Telluride.
So it was. Stay with me.
There was a that they had essentially built that this.
They just slipped and fell down a mountain.
Hang on, let me get there. So it was like an energy drink company that threw a big party and they brought in a bunch of DJs and they essentially wrapped it around a Beastie Boys theme, and then all the advertisements implied that the Beastie Boys were actually involved or had endorsed it in some way, which they had not, and so they took them to court. And so in light of, like, the funny thing is like, you know, you look at something like Paul's Boutique, or, you know, if we were talking about De La Soul, all this, like, sort of commercial interplay that's just designed...
suing millionaires.
Well, and in this case, it's, like, millionaires suing stupid companies that don't think they'll come after him. So, anyway, it doesn't...
It
I don't think that they spend...
Somebody had slipped on a hill and they sued.
That's the... I don't know. Anyway, but at the very least, I did find, like... that, and that just came down the past couple of weeks. Like, I did find it, like, really interesting that... there, you know, like, and the reason that I originally brought it up is that one of the things that got stipulated in MCA's will was that he didn't want their music to be used for commercial purposes.
You see that video that happened last year with a,
the girls thing?
Yeah, the girls thing.
Yeah, that was the other one. There have been two suits.
I mean, there couldn't be a more selfless, brighter way to use their music. But then they sued them because of his will. I don't want to be used in commercials.
Yeah. I mean, at the very least, like...
If you go back and you listen to the license to ill, I hope no bad people come, and throwing pies in the face, and then...
With a cartoonish concept.
And they're in, like, that sort of bad one-bedroom apartment, like, with a shitty couch, like, we're all, like... It looks like a clowny version of the worst possible scenario of your life. If you're that
well, no. But, if you look at that video in particular, the guy has like a point. I'm doing air quotes again. You started this precedent tonight, by the way, with the air quotes.
Well, I'm happy to have
facilitated being able to express myself fully on the air. The guy was wearing Poindexter glasses, which I believe also had tape in the middle, which apparently, for some reason, by the way, that was a really hilarious joke in the 80s. Guys with glasses.
Fake
glasses.
Tape
in the
middle.
Urkeling?
Tape in the middle.
Was it Urkeling?
We can do suspenders too. No, sure. I don't. Yeah,
but I mean that was kind of the thing though. It was like the hyper actualization of being nerdy. Meanwhile, you know, or
those guys were kind of nerdy.
Yeah, sure.
So have either of you guys ever seen the Beastie Boys live? Because
I have.
You have.
Yeah.
Where did you see them?
I saw them at the Irwin Center.
When?
The last time that they were here, which was
99.
No, because I had just moved. Anyway, I just moved to Austin in 99, but they toured. I don't know, probably it was, I'm going to guess, mid-2000s, the mid-aughts.
Oh, yeah, they put that out. To the Five Boroughs, that record?
Something like that, and they brought the DJ who spins with them a lot, and...
Casey Kasem?
No, it was Mixmaster Mike.
Did you hear about Casey Kasem? He was just kidnapped recently from his... He's got Parkinson's, and... Dimension, he was kidnapped from his nursing home by his
wife. No, but that would be a really awesome episode of Top 40. He would do one now.
Yeah, it's like... It's,
I'm Casey, and I'm hiding somewhere in Washington State. My wife won't let me tell you where.
Well, and
the first song today that I'm going to play Top 40 is The Beatles.
The really weird thing about that is... Well, two really weird things about the Casey Kasem story. One is that His wife is, if you ever saw...
Jean Kasem.
Well, she was on Cheers.
Cheers.
The wife.
She was Nick Tortelli's wife when he rewired.
Carla's first husband.
Yeah. And the other thing was, is that apparently when he was out in Washington State,
I almost literally just sprayed beer all over my computer when you said Washington State because you just gave... You just let me know that I was right about guessing his state. But
again, no, that's where he was. That's totally where he was. And
high five.
Apparently, he was found because he was standing outside reaching for the sky. That's not true.
It should be, though. But
anyway, yeah.
And so, for my next selection.
Yeah, it was long distance as shit.
Long
distance as shit.
So you saw the Beastie Boys here in Austin.
So I did see the Beastie Boys here in Austin. The one interesting, and it was a pretty interesting show, and it was like one of these deals that I was like, check on the list. I want to see this band, and we did.
Like a bucket list kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, yes. Clearly, it was a bucket list.
So old.
Yes.
You were so old when you were 25.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. One of the things that I thought was pretty interesting that they did was they actually ran around with a bunch of video cameras and interviewed people who were standing in line for that show and edited it and showed it during the show. To the point where they did it all on the fly and it was intensely collaborative and one of these things where it wasn't like just a like fan bullshit high five situation. So I thought that was like, I was pretty impressed by the way that they put it together. That said, you know, the show was exactly what you would think it would be,
right,
which is kind of a greatest hits thing, and you know what.
I remember reading the thing. That's the weird thing about hip hop shows in general is you don't really stray from the script.
Well, I'll tell you that one of the worst shows I've ever seen in my life was Handsome Boy Modeling School during South by Southwest, and
it's not rap.
Well,
kind of rap.
Sure, but the point. Let me ask you how much of a band this is. Dan the Automator and the other guy whose handle I can't remember right now. Dan the Automator. Basically stood on stage and drank Crevassier while the rest of the show went on. Like, that was it. And then at some point they brought people up.
For the performers, for the audience, it sucks.
Well, right. I was like, will the fun ever start? So yeah.
That also should... That should be the name of your second comedy album.
Yeah, exactly.
But by the way, I have to say, we were talking about this before we started rolling tonight. Kevin walked in here and just said, "I should have started drinking before you fools showed up," which needs to be the title of your first comedy album. But
well, you know, I'm laughing on the inside. That's all I can say.
And you are, and I can profess to this, you're crying on the outside.
I'm crying on the outside. Well, those are also the jalapeno sweats that come from sitting in my garage.
Kevin, these jalapeno sweats, man. That's going to be my punk band.
It should be.
I'm getting in trouble. We need to get on topic.
Yeah, all right.
I actually have semi-seen the Beastie Boys as well. So to direct things back into a Beastie Boys realm. I believe, if I'm not mistaken here, and it's been 20 years or whatever, I saw them at the second Lollapalooza, and as you guys may remember, Lollapalooza was kind of an all-day concern back then. I would have been like 21 or something, maybe 20, but somehow I managed to get my hands on copious amounts of beer all day long, and I'm pretty sure during the Beastie Boys, somehow, I'm just crafty that way.
Did you put it in the backpack?
You know, at this point, I don't really remember. I do remember I was wearing jorts. AKA
you were the
shorts.
Tim Duncan of your day.
Yes. Anyhow, they had, you know, sort of your quote-unquote chill tent. And I'm pretty sure by the time the Beastie Boys played, I just laid down on the ground and took a nap.
Because they made you shut down. They started yelling at you.
No, stop it.
you had to go away from it. You don't have to deal with that day, Ryan. It was an all-day thing in the sun.
Did they ask you please to quit?
I don't think we have.
No, we did.
I think we should talk about it every week.
Maybe we should. It'll be There's a long,
if you step
long
to me
tail
with your bullshit. I'm gonna have to ask you, please.
That was a rap band that Ryan saw on the streets.
That was
we were at an
industry party. You and I were.
Oh, we were.
And they were going around handing out promotional copies of their CD.
Well, let's just say this about their career: Ryan and I went back home and listened to it, and never got past the first lines of the first song, which were in the drum machine, was about as simple as it is on License to Ill, like
KCO.
Like, if you're gonna step to me with your bullshit, I'm gonna have to ask you please to quit.
Which is awesome because that sort of subverts
of
the whole, like, it is, yeah, because of everything. But it, like, subverts the idea of, like, the big macho, like, and there's a lot of that on this record, like, on Paul's Boutique, like,
where there's the
braggadocio, like, situation, but that's the thing that I like about that story, is that, you know, they're polite about it.
They're puffing up, but they're also very polite.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I'm gonna ask you.
Please.
Would you quit?
Yeah. You over here who's stepping to me with the bullshit over here. If you just go ahead and cut it out, that would be great.
I've got you at 11. I need you to 4.
Dear sir.
So,
yeah.
So
if
okay.
One could consider the cessation
of the stepping to me with your bullshit, I would really appreciate it.
So, on that note, what I'd like to do is let us dive into a little bit of Hey Ladies, because I want to talk about how they, like, sort of the way that Beastie Boys looked at women. Like, I think, like, in a little bit of a serious way, but maybe not.
No, but I'm glad
I think that
that's
shows an evolutionary.
Right.
That's
my way to play to the ladies earlier, because you see a maturation from girls, but barely. You know,
yeah.
Like girls.
Yeah.
From License to Ill. You see a little maturation, but then Hey Ladies, you see significantly more, but at the same time, it's still really juvenile. It's probably one of the most juvenile tracks on the album.
And the only one I knew before having listened to this record, like, Hey Ladies is the only song I consciously knew from this record.
I like that you said consciously, because I like to imagine that you passed out at a party one time 20 years ago, somebody put a speaker right up.
That very well may have happened after writing on me with a Sharpie.
I probably did that.
All right. Let's give this a whirl. This is Hey Ladies.
Craftsman, 3/4 of 1 horsepower garage door opener. That's about what it looked like, except for jutting out.
What
the?
Oh, the nose hair?
The ear hair that was jutting out from that said orifice while I was.
Wait. Is an ear actually.
Yeah, it's a hole.
I mean,
it's, well.
I guess it's an orifice, but is it.
Do we need science to solve this for us right now?
Well, like, all I'm really saying is it was like, you know, stuff goes an inch and a half, like 2 inch long, basically looked like a giant pube jutting out from the side of my head.
And when's the wedding?
Yeah, I'll send you an invite.
Sure.
So that was Hey Ladies.
That was Hey Ladies. And one of the reasons that I thought it'd be worthwhile to play Hey Ladies is that I think that this record kind of...
Let me scoot my chair real quick.
Oh, sure.
You hear squeak.
This record feels like... clearly, I think because License to Ill is so...
Misogynistic?
Well, it is, but it's just bass. You know what I mean? Like,
okay, right.
Like, it's the starting
when
point.
When he says bass, right...
No, oh, can you
not
know?
B-A-S-E.
B-A-S-E.
Yeah. Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. We're talking about the beginning.
Not getting to first base. That's a whole different thing.
So
I haven't seen that.
You
in a
just
while.
Look so confused. Oh, getting first base?
Yeah. Fingers crossed, though.
Oh, I thought you were saying you were making a joke. Like, I haven't seen that in a while. Like, it were a movie, but now I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Anyway.
You ain't seen no titties in a little while.
So, all right. So anyway, I think I feel like this, and also great segue on the ladies bit, guys. So
we win. can I take my coat and put it over a pole for
screeching sound you just heard?
First base.
Anyway,
isn't it first base? Is it?
I think first base is making out. My
all right, well,
is it?
So
I guess I never thought it was. Okay, so we're interrupting Kevin. Kevin's on.
So
so
the deal is that I feel like this record feels like they're, you know, clearly it's more sophisticated than what they did on that first LP, and beyond that, like. There's a little bit. It's sort of like there's a little bit of both worlds, right? Like there's a little bit. There's stuff like Hey Ladies, where it's designed to be like a kind of like a little bit of a party song, and then there's some other stuff like the song that you played before, which
right.
is like feels like it's like
too
lyrically, yeah, feels like it's of that world, but it's also like, you know, it's a little bit like they're taking a step back and a
yeah,
little bit more.
You can feel like they're being playful when. I don't know who.
Well, and what's up with the like bluegrass foray right in the middle of Hey Ladies?
After Hey Ladies?
Well, that's so. Yeah,
well,
that's it's
just,
it's a segue. Like that's samples. Actually a separate track, but that's but it's indicative of the way this record works is as a whole. Like it's one song bleeds into the other, and they're all vignettes. I
well,
think, in
do
LA,
you
a little bit.
Do you guys remember? I'm just gonna put you say what's up with the bluegrass track. Do you guys remember? We're gonna move forward a couple of years to Ill Communication, and they have. What might be my favorite Beastie Boys track, The Biz versus The Nuge. And it's Biz Markie, the Beastie Boys, they're coming home again. And then
right.
The Nuge,
like being Ted Nugent?
Yes, of
yes.
course.
He's like playing his crossbow, I should assume.
I guess, yeah. He's strung his bow. He's killed a lot of goats over the years and made guitar or harp strings, as it were, out of them. And
sounds about right.
He plays his harp with his hatred
yeah,
for Obama.
Actually,
he's
tanned.
He's
tanned.
Playing with his hatred for Obama.
Yes,
it's quite stiff.
He's tanned hides, and is and has thinned the hides to where they each have different pitch.
I imagine like a giant xylophone with the hides like.
Man, he's got like a guitar made of jerky.
it's a really amazing orchestra. The only problem is it takes like 6 years to put together.
Yes.
So.
But that's planning.
It is.
He's sitting there out there somewhere in North Texas rubbing his hands together.
You got to have time to bend up a hat. So, but anyway, I do think that this record in particular, like. There are some signs again. And we talked about this last week with the different album that you can with hindsight you can kind of see where these bands maybe certainly where they end up going, but maybe what they were starting to think about. And I'm sure that somebody had to be in the Beastie Boys ear. Maybe they were just reading their own press about like, hey, we're not
dicks.
what we sound like
on
that first record.
Yeah, we're not a bunch of mooks.
Yeah,
yeah, like we. So, I mean, definitely. I definitely read an interview with Mike D years ago, and he was talking about how the thing that they had to go away for years because they were so offended that people didn't get the joke. And then I saw all these pictures of, like, Mike D using, like, a giant inflatable Coke can masturbating into the audience. Like, really? People didn't get your joke?
Yeah.
Well, there's anything to get.
You didn't exactly let people know.
Well,
they did kind of
an early career pivot, much in the same way that radio did, transitioning from what's the first
radio?
Radiohead.
Yeah, but you didn't say head. You just said radio.
Oh, from Pablo Honey to
Honey to the Benz.
Yeah,
like I remember, you know, and we won't go off on this too much, but it is sort of analogous. I remember Kevin like bringing the cassette of the Benz. I'm like, what are you doing with this one hit wonder crap band? And you're like, no, man, it's actually good.
I mean,
and
yeah,
I think
that's a good analogy. Yeah.
That's sort of what happened with Paul's Boutique.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. It's analogous.
It's analogous.
And that's sort of what happened with the Beastie Boys. Everybody probably thought that they were just going to go away and, you know, go to, you know, whatever hip-hop retirement home folks go to.
It's a Sweatband Acres. Like whatever.
Sweatband Acres, yeah.
It's like...
They've got the Lysis Adidas suites.
And they'll meet you there. With you guys could have matching trucker hats. And for me, the funny thing is like I hated the first record. I missed this one altogether for years, and then they got to me with the third one, and for whatever reason,
it was
I did like
it. That record meant so well. It partially meant so much to me. Personally,
which one?
Check Your Head.
Yeah,
because the first time I ever saw What You Want on MTV, I was tripping on it. I was visiting Austin from Kerrville, and I was tripping on acid, and everybody else went to bed, and I was sitting by myself at like 5 a.m, like just I didn't know what to do.
Mind blown.
I'm just. So then they have that like really trippy video, and nothing else was really interesting at that time. Like I felt like the music that was really on MTV was Pearl Jam and. Alice in Chains and a bunch of other mumbly, grumbly, boring bands were on. And then all of a sudden, What You Want comes on with that fisheye lid that are leaning into the camera. And I'm on LSD like, this is fucking amazing.
Well, I'm just surprised that you weren't frightened. But the
No, I was not frightened.
Yeah, that's great.
I probably, if I had seen that video twice in a row, I would have been frightened a second time. But we didn't have TV.
Well, and I do that's another thing that we haven't really talked about is that I feel like that whole like that aesthetic of them throwing themselves at the camera has become like a hip hop like it's a move. Like it's a standard move.
There's so I'm glad that you said there's so much about Paul's Boutique. That's the thing. They took you had a lot of different schools of hip hop at that time in the late 80s, early 90s where you had before gangster rap gangster rap really in 93, 94, thank you, Dr. Dre, co-opted that 70s sample stuff. If you, all of like the mini moves and all those R&B beats that are on the Chronic. I mean, that stuff did not exist that before Paul's Boutique. Even though Paul's Boutique sounds different than that, it's that blaxploitation film sound.
Definitely.
That was not existing before Paul's Boutique.
Right.
When you had other stuff like Trap Called Quest, which was... sort of there, but it was also jazz related.
Well, am I not mistaken in believing that aren't these guys like all sons of rabbis?
The Beastie Boys?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true.
I mean, I have a computer here. I can look that up right now. You might be right. I mean, I believe that. Pretty sure that is not the case, dude.
Yeah, it may or may not be, or it might just be something I thought.
Is that an urban legend?
Like, once. I don't know how legendary it is.
It's an Urban Outfitters legend.
Yes, that's where I heard it, actually.
It's weird. It's in the back. Like
I love how at Urban Outfitters they have, like, randomly, like, hipster self-help books in, like, a little grab bag in front of the stores whenever you go there.
Like, for instance?
Something like that.
The big challenge is...
books.
Is that, they're, like, they've... served me well in past incarnations, but I remember
when
like,
you were 19.
When I threw theme parties more often than I do now, which is never, And then you do.
You threw a princess themed party for your daughter.
Well, that's
not, that's a different
theme kind of
party.
It is. Not at Urban Outfitters.
Wait, did you ever throw a party at an Urban Outfitters?
No.
You can get one of those DJs from the McDonald's we were talking about.
No, but I did throw a gold theme party where like you're just supposed to wear yellow, and I found the shirt that I bought at Urban Outfitters off the like we got to get this out of here rack that had like a I don't know it's like a saucy 80s. Cheetah
I
on
think
it.
They pretty much have been doing saucy 80s at Urban Outfitters since like 1995.
Yeah, I don't know. It came with a scarf. So, you know, there's like everybody wins. Or at least people who need scarves.
All shirts should come with scarves.
So,
frankly.
We should at some point circle back to the record. You know, I think. We've probably cussed and discussed a few things that are probably pretty well known.
Holy shit. Wait a minute. That is gotta be the name of my country album.
Cussed and discussed.
By Git. Git is good.
Git.
That's the name of my band now. Git is the name of the band. Yeah. The name of the album is Cussed and Discussed. But wait, is it Cussed and Discussed?
It's Cussed
is
in,
it or,
like,
or Discussed? D-A-S-T-U-S-T. Discussed and disgust.
And that reminds me of one of the segue tracks that show up on this record. Like right before Staring Down the Bullet of a Gun.
Oh yeah, you missed this.
Barrel of a Gun.
No, we were just talking
Somebody's
about
got a gun.
Did you want to play one of the B-sides?
Oh no, the B-sides are great though. We were looking up, we got to looking up.
Yeah, Ryan went to Tinkle and we were listening to the B-sides.
Hey man, I was taking a whiz.
Yeah.
Taking a whiz. Excuse
a manly,
me, sir.
Super manly whiz. So yeah, this is a really interesting. So I was talking earlier about this Paul's Boutique website and they go through like all the samples that they've been able to figure out and there are the lyrics to each one of the songs and you know, they give it sort of the kid gloves treatment. But the interesting thing is that beyond all that, they have B-side tracks. And most of these songs I don't know, and I assume that they just came out on vinyl. But I'm kind of really fascinated by them because they are, and I'll give you a few of them. One of them is called 33% God. it's like he's God, but he's like just a third of it. He's almost there. He thinks he's all that, but there's still he's got 2/3 to go. Yourself,
isn't that like the Holy Trinity.
Well, it's a third. Well, just one.
Yeah, because yeah. There's
like you've just
the Son,
Holy
the
Spirit.
Father, and the Holy Ghost.
Well, it reminds me of the like if any of Los Lonely Boys ever went solo, like by he could just be like El Only Boy. Anyway, that's a story for another time. But. But yeah, 33% God, Diss Yourself in 89, Just Do It, which I thought was like kind of a Nike twist on that thing, which I was, and like self-deprecating. They're saying Diss Yourself right there in the title.
Mm-hmm.
And then my favorite one is Some Dumb Cop Gave Me 2 Tickets Already.
I'm really interested in that song.
Like, and we know that they're not in New York, they're in LA, so it could just be that they don't know what they're doing.
Could be. Well, there's a lot more driving in LA than there is in New York, so... More dumb cops to police said driving.
Yeah. And expensive beers.
Expensive beers, which I don't know if you guys recall that when I spent the summer of 06 in L.A., went to my local watering hole, nothing fancy, and ordered a Coors Light, and it was $5. And my thought was, where are the tits?
Maybe something we should have.
What? A $5 beer? That's insanity. Yeah.
And this was 06. They're probably 6 or 7 now.
It's just rolling right over your head there. So.
Yeah. Well, it was insanity.
Anyway, you know, it's a record that sort of spun off some legends. And I think we learned a few things along the way. And I think it's also been, you know, it's been one of these that I think in some ways.
Oh, you know what we didn't talk about, though?
What?
We were talking about this earlier. What was the song? we were talking about while Ryan was in the bathroom. It was the one that
Some Dub Cop gave me two tickets already.
No, not one of the B sides. No, one of the songs on the album, Staring Down the Barrel of a Gun.
Looking Down the Barrel.
Yeah.
Which exactly. I've called like seven different things, but that's really what it is.
Yeah, I think I have to. But that song, I really want. I wanted to hear a clip from that because that, and we talked about it just for a second, because that song is the one that shows the difference where they cross over
the growth.
The growth, yeah. Well, it's like a Rick Rubin felt very strongly about how rap should be rock and roll based or heavy metal based, and this album destroyed that idea. Really, it took. If you go back and you listen to Run DMC, I mean that shit is rock and roll based. I mean,
sure.
You know, like, and really easy drum beats, but very, very much based on the guitar.
Almost angular, though. And I don't think this record is very angular.
No, I don't either. I mean, there's lots of guitars in this record, but they're R&B guitars, not Slayer or Van Halen guitars.
Right.
But I think that this song is the one that...
More like Curtis Mayfield guitars. Like,
right, exactly.
Well,
yeah,
and there's...
Yeah.
And Curtis Mayfield is on this record. So,
oh, there you go.
There you go. One of the 300. So should we give it a spin?
Yeah, let's do this. Let's listen to a little bit of this, and we'll wrap it up on this.
Sounds good. Looking Down the Barrel of a Gun.
So Rick Rubin moved to California and he started Deaf American, and then he decided he didn't want to be Deaf American, so he made this, he had
Deaf
a big
American.
Pref conference. Pref?
A pref conference.
A pref conference. He started a pref conference. He started this press conference and they cut out the word DEF and buried it, and he officially like threw the last shovel full of soil on the grave of Deaf. So, yeah.
Symbolic.
Yeah.
I guess it was. Did that really matter?
I don't know. I mean, I guess, you know, I guess if we're going to sort of wrap this record up in a nutshell and sort of what some of those things meant, I think the fact that it still sounds pretty fresh. Yeah, and I don't mean that in a hip hop way. Like, I mean, literally fresh. Like,
I don't think they say fresh anymore.
Like, just out of the crisper. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds chill.
Oh, that type of fresh.
Yeah. Fresh.
And yes, not
oh
like
my
dope.
God,
and
you guys
and
I'm literally going to drop this mic and walk out of this
He's
room.
He's
going to
drop
now.
The mic, ladies and gentlemen.
Are you going to drop it in a like really theatrical way?
You guys need to stop.
Is it
my
hot?
Face
is it
red?
Is it because
hot,
of
so
my garage is too
over.
Hot? Is the mic hot? You're going to drop the mic
no.
when it's hot?
Stop and stop.
I'm going to lay on some cardboard and do some break dancing.
Anyway. All
right.
Yeah, no, that's Paul's Boutique. And frankly, like, I'm excited that we get a chance to goof on it a little bit. It's one of my favorite records, and it's one of these things and. That I have found that I don't. There are a lot of records that I love that I get into, that I just get into on my own schedule, and this was one of them. And
well,
I've it was
never
cool
known
to talk about it.
I've always known it as background music, and so it was really cool to get in there and listen to it. I've always loved it in the background, but I never really listened to it before. Ryan is scared of it.
I just don't like being yelled at. And not that I don't think it's good music. It's definitely good music.
You don't know them. They're not here.
Yeah, but
they kind of are.
They're a little aggressive.
Yeah. That's, well, who would listen to the modest and careful rap band?
The very polite rap band.
Well, looking down the barrel of a BB pistol.
I think Arrested Development was a polite rap band back in the day. Yeah, nobody really listens to them anymore.
Yeah, that might be true. So, were we going to tease what we're talking about
next
week?
Oh, okay. So next week. Next week, it's your turn, Ryan. What are we doing next week?
We're doing Fleetwood Mac's Rumors, which sold a bajillion records.
Yeah, so you know this is a very important record to a lot of people.
Well, yeah, and it was a certified bajillion copy seller.
Bajillion? Is
yes,
that a legitimate?
Yeah, it's a... Yeah, it's an element that they make the record out of that you hang on the wall.
A bajillion?
Like, yeah. Like, in any case...
One bajillion.
One bajillion copies. In any case, it was sort of ubiquitous in the 70s, yet I was a little young for it at the moment. I was busy listening to the Grease soundtrack. And
good God.
You know, I know those guys.
Yeah, I got
those are, thank you for taking the words out of my mouth.
Son of a... Yeah.
Yeah. In any case,
yeah, there's we won't talk about
record.
That. There's not enough time.
You know, I feel like picking that record for my next album because you had such an intense reaction to it.
What, Grease soundtrack?
Oh yeah,
it's shitty.
I hate Grease.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
See, but we can't do Somebody Hates It. That's not what this album.
There,
that's
and,
not
and the
album.
Thing
that's
is, there's well, believe me, there's plenty of time to suffer.
Sorority Girls love the Grease soundtrack.
Yeah, but I hate it.
Yeah,
so you can't have like two of the three
all
people
right,
involved.
When I was 5 years old, I didn't know any better.
And yeah, that's true. Anyway,
but
you were saying
on
Rumors.
In fact, Fleetwood Mac's Rumors, up until maybe 6 months ago, I've never actually sat down and listened to the whole thing.
I mean, you've heard some of the songs.
I've heard all of them. All of it. There's, and I won't get into it too much. There's one song, and we'll talk about it next week, that I had not heard before.
Wow.
But it's
so ubiquitous. When you hear those songs like constantly, you don't think about them working together in tandem over the course of an album
as well.
Right.
Well, there's crazy stuff on that album. I mean, when you never think about how sad it is. It's a sad, sad album.
Well,
I only know that
they were going through some shit.
And
that's all we'll say about it.
Right, and let's not spend too much time going there because we want to talk about it in depth next week. But I for one am really excited to meet our new Fleetwood Mac overlords.
That's right.
And so next week we're going to do Fleetwood Mac Rumors, and
you've got the week after that.
I've got the week after that, and I'm gonna go ahead and do this. And both of you guys, I mentioned this to you earlier, and you were not happy about it, but I'm laying down the gauntlet.
Man, don't say it.
I am, and I'll tell you why. Tell you why. Bruce Springsteen is the king of New Jersey, but Jon Bon Jovi is the crown prince. He is beloved
jester.
There's that too. But he's a beloved man. So I'm throwing it down. In 2 weeks, we are doing Jon Bon Jovi's seminal album.
I may have to tease up my hair with crispy bangs.
That's fine.
I'll even come over to your house and
help you do that.
I might spend half an hour kicking my own ass for listening to it, but
we'll
do it, and I'll happily suffer for someone else's art. And what do we say at the end, guys?
This is Shane Bartel, Ryan Newsom, Kevin Newsom, signing off. This show is Somebody Likes It.
Somebody likes it.
Somebody likes it.
Maybe not us, but somebody does.
See you next week.